Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning and welcome back from Memorial Day. It is 5:30, 2017, and we have, as we salute those who served and died, there's a lot of news out there as well. And here's the question that I have for you today. Would you die... would you fight and die for your PC beliefs? And what I mean by that is there was a situation in Portland, my old stomping grounds. And during this rant that this guy had that was an anti-PC, anti-Muslim, and I'm sure was very rude and disrespectful, a couple of gentlemen got up to talk to a guy that was from, apparently, it turns out later, he was from the Aryan Nation, so a very unsavory person, but they tried to intervene, and this guy jumped up and stabbed them with a knife. And I'm just wondering if you thought to yourself the same thing that I did when I heard it. Was it avoidable? Did they have to confront this guy? Could they have let him just sit there? And it makes me wonder, just go off on his rant. in the theory of free speech. Whether you would include that as part of free speech, I'm not really sure. And I don't, obviously, not a real expert on this topic, on this particular situation. I've just heard a couple of stories on this, but I'm wondering, you know, these are social justice warriors. These are people who get up and fight. So if they saw somebody, for example, if they saw a gay couple with children, they wouldn't go up to this person and say, you know, you're doing wrong, because that would not, that in itself would be politically incorrect. Or if they went up to somebody else, or saw somebody else doing something that was protected, they wouldn't say anything. But I'm just wondering if we've trained. I'm talking to the gay marriage thing, things that used to be considered just beyond the pale. They would probably applaud, but they hear somebody who's ranting about Islam or whatever else, foreigners, immigrants. Is it the job of people to go up and confront these individuals? I mean, I'm sure if they had to do it over again, they would not have done that because it cost them their lives. So the question is then, was it worth dying for? On the alternative, would it have been wrong to let this guy just say his piece, you know, or whatever? Now, he could have been in these girls' faces. I mean, certainly that's possible, and I don't know. But it was my understanding that he was in an area where these young ladies were sitting. The guy that did the stabbing was ranting and raving. I don't believe he was in their face. I haven't heard that in the thing. But anyway, here's the question. Is it up to people to enforce political correctness in public? That's my question. And if these guys hadn't done this, would they have been dead? And I think the answer is probably, I mean, I'm of the opinion that the chances of them dying go up radically once they get up and confront this guy and say, you know, you have no right to talk to Muslims that way. And they interviewed the girls and crying, and she talked about how sorry they were and how guilty they felt and everything. But here is a little clip from this.
Tonight about the accused killer, Jeremy Joseph Christian. The 35-year-old has a felony record for robbery, kidnapping, and burglary.
Our Lisa Balick digging deeper into his past. She joins us live outside the Justice Center where he's being held tonight without bail. Lisa, you went to his neighborhood. What did you find out?
Well, the Portland man had been living for several years with his parents in their North Portland home. I talked with several nearby neighbors who tell me he didn't socialize much with their families. Court records we found indicate he served prison time for robbery and kidnapping. He was also convicted of being a felon with a gun and violated supervision, so was back in custody 4 years ago. But the day before the stabbings, a TriMet writer recorded him ranting in the seat in front of her.
Oh, it's like we got a Christian or Muslim bus driver. I'll stab you too.
Police confirm he had thrown a bottle at a black woman at a MAC station just before that.
He's complaining about the city, complaining about just Muslims, Christians, and it just got very violent very quick. By the time we were at Gateway, he was, you know, talking about wanting to stab somebody and gestured to pull something out of his pocket. Everybody around me got up.
Christian's Facebook page is filled with threats against police, pro-Nazi pages, and he calls Oklahoma City terrorist Timothy McVeigh a true patriot. He lists heavy metal music and comics as favorites. I went to his family home in North Portland today. No one answered the door. Neighbors off camera told me they would sometimes see him outside reading comic books and once walking up and down the street waving an American flag recently. Homes nearby have some mixed race and gay couples. Those who I spoke with told me they have never had any trouble with Christian or his family. Now, again, Christian is being housed here, and he will make his first court appearance for arraignment tomorrow afternoon, and Coin 6 will definitely be there. Live in downtown Portland, Lisa Valick, Coin 6 News.
All right, so I'm looking at this guy. He's an absolute scumbag. If somebody is in front of you and ranting and raving and talking about stabbing other people, would you really get up in their face and say, knock that off? It just seems like political correctness is taking away people's common sense. Here's a little more from KOIN in Portland.
Welcome, everybody, to Coin 6 News at 6 o'clock. I'm Jennifer Hoff.
I'm Jeff Giannola. In that deadly Max attack, the two men killed Ricky Best, an Army veteran, with three teenage sons and a 12-year-old daughter. The other, Talijan Namkhai Mesh, a recent Reed College graduate with a degree in economics. And a third man who also stepped in to help. He was stabbed but survived, Micah Fletcher. He remains in the hospital tonight.
Our team coverage begins tonight with our Chris Holmstrom, who had a chance to talk with Micah's grandmother. He's live at the Hollywood Max station where this all happened. And really, Chris, just a growing memorial there.
Yeah, it really is. And it's really amazing to see all of the support out here, especially the families. We have parents bringing out their children, teaching them to stand up against hate.
We're just so sorry.
You can hear the pain in Janice Heater's voice. Her grandson, Micah Fletcher, was one of the three victims from the TriMet attack. He was also the only man who survived.
We're very distraught over what happened to them and are very sad for their families.
Portland police say Micah was attacked by Jeremy Christian, a convicted felon with a long criminal history. Authorities say it all started when Christian started harassing a Muslim teenager. That's when these three stepped up in her defense. But Micah's grandma says they weren't the only heroes on the train, one of them being an Iraq War veteran who saved Micah's life.
He knew something was wrong, got up the train, saw Micah in bad shape and calling for help, and he just went over and held him and took off his shirt and blocked the wound.
Micah was sent to the hospital with stab wounds. His grandmother tells me this isn't the first time he stood up to social injustice.
He's actually done that a number of times and been in some risky situations. And his mom always said, you know, someday, Micah, someday. But we were hoping someday it wouldn't happen.
But as we all know, it did. Now this Portland community mourns and will always be reminded of the hate that is out there.
I hope people learn from this, and I hope people continue to stand up for what's right.
And so far, people have raised more than $1 million. That money will go to the victims and also the families. If you want to donate, we have that information on coin.com.
Yeah, Portland is a super liberal place. I mean, it's beautiful, wonderful place. But I'm sure it's full of social justice warriors. But my question, was that the right thing to do? Wouldn't it have been, in retrospect, obviously, it would have been better to call the police? Generally speaking, isn't it obvious that, I mean, what's the difference between a busybody and a do-gooder and a social justice warrior? And I mean, are these people going around trying to take away other people's free speech? Now, you might say, well, this guy didn't have a right to sit there and trash these Muslim girls, basically teenagers. But he wasn't in their face, but he did, you know, mention pulling out a knife. I mean, I think this guy had some sort of a psychotic attack, breakdown or whatever. You see pictures of him. He looks drugged out of his mind. Anybody who's living at home and their daily, you know, what they spend their time doing is reading comic books. I mean, he's probably, it was on some level of disability, but the question remains, should people go and try to get other people in public to conform to their beliefs? What would be the difference between a Christian or a Muslim coming up to a gay couple and saying, you know, that's not right, you know, this and that? It's somebody's version of what's right, what's true. It's being forced on others. And I'm asking, if they hadn't provoked this guy and told him to shut up, if this whole thing would have escalated. maybe it would have anyway, but I can't imagine. The guy's just sitting on the bus kind of ranting and raving. They should have called the police. The bus driver should have called the police. The people in the back should have pulled out their cell phones and called the police and reported the incident instead of trying to play superhero. And this grandmother, mother, whoever it was, talking about grandson getting into problems before, basically, why? Being a busybody, being a social justice warrior, and forcing their beliefs on others. Here's one more clip on this race attack.
Oregon are praising two men who were killed protecting a pair of teenagers from a tirade. Friday's deadly attack happened aboard a light rail train. One of the young women was wearing a Muslim head covering. The two men killed are recent college grad and a retired Army veteran. Police say they intervened when another man yelled slurs at the teens. Maria Villarreal is in Portland, where a memorial is growing near the scene of the attack. Maria, good morning.
Well, good morning. Thousands of people here in Portland have left candles and cards and flowers, messages of support here, and all for the people, the men who died, who intervened. Those messages, they're all different here, but the consistent theme is you are heroes.
They lost their lives because of me and my friend and the way we looked.
Destiny Mangum and her 17-year-old friend, who is Muslim, were confronted on a Portland light rail train Friday night by 35-year-old Jeremy Christian. As he told them to get out of his country, three bystanders came to their defense.
Then they just all started arguing. He just started stabbing people, and it was just blood everywhere, and we just started running for our lives.
Two of the three men were killed. 23-year-old Talisin Mirdan Namkaimechi was a recent graduate from Reed College in Portland. Rachel Macy says she tried to help him and heard his final words.
Tell them. I want everybody to know. I want everybody on the train to know I love them.
53-year-old Ricky Best was also killed. He was an Army veteran and father of four. His son Eric says he's not surprised his dad stepped in to help.
Didn't matter color, ethnicity, religion. He just wanted help whoever was in need.
Christian was arrested after witnesses followed him and called police. It wasn't his first time making threatening remarks on the train. This video of Christian was taken just one day before the attack.
Oh, it's like we got a Christian or Muslim bus driver. I'll stab you too. Move forward.
Christian has served time for robbery and doesn't hide his affinity for Nazis and political violence.
A couple weeks ago, we've had some different protest rallies in Portland where he was at those rallies yelling hate speech.
Portland's police chief hopes what people remember is not this act of violence, but the multiple acts of bravery.
One of the people that was deceased is a war veteran. I'm a warrior. That's rough. To have people step in and do that, that's courage.
The surviving attack victim, 21-year-old Micah Fletcher, was reportedly saved when another Good Samaritan on the train tended to his wounds. Now, police say there is surveillance video from the train of the attack that should help them in the case against Christian, who is set to be arraigned tomorrow.
Guy looks like he just had a psychotic break, but he was ranting not just about Muslims, but about Christians. But are these guys heroes? They intervened. The guy's just sitting in a seat ranting and raving about people. Would they have intervened if a group of people in three-piece suits came in wearing ties, holding briefcases, and the guy started ranting and raving about capitalism? You know? Although you can say these were teenage girls. And I don't know. I mean, I would have to have seen it, but it seems to me that this is another case, possibly another case of social justice warrior busybodies escalating and making things worse. And I just would like to ask you, in how many different ways has political correctness made this country more dangerous, less safe, less pleasant, et cetera? All right. So anyway, Greg Allman died. Greg Allman was one of the, I guess, the superstars of Southern rock, and also his brother, Dwayne, was considered to be the second best, if you can even measure this stuff, guitarist behind Jimi Hendrix. But started the Allman Brother Band, and tour de force. And Greg played guitar, he played organ, he played Hammond B3 organ, and wrote a lot of great songs. Here's one of them, and this is from what some people consider the greatest live album ever recorded, Fillmore East, when they closed down the Fillmore. We'll be back, 6:23, Kelly O'Connelly, I'm Las Cruces. Welcome back from Memorial Day. Hope you had a great time. We'll be right back. Hey, it's Kelly. It's Kelly.
Kelly, I can't believe what I'm hearing from you. You know, really, you think this is about political correctness. How about just human decency? How long do you sit on a train and let somebody poke and rant? God, Kelly.
Hey, listen to me for a second. I'm back on the air. There's something wrong with the system. So... Do you want to say anything on the air?
Not particularly.
Mike, the question is, did they save somebody or did they escalate the situation? Why not just call the cops?
I mean, it sounded like an imminent situation. It sounded like something was happening right then. He's poking at them. He's making fun of them. I mean, do you quietly sit there and read your newspaper and pretend that is not happening? Is that the political correctness of the right? Trump himself has enabled this to happen. His attitude, his rallies where it was okay.
Kathy, what I'm asking is, did they make the situation better or worse? They're dead.
Well, they made it worse for themselves. They sure did. And you know what? At one time, I was in that situation, and I chose the other way. I got on the phone, and I called. And I regretted it most of my life that I didn't step in. I mean, I could be dead. The person I'm with, you know, I was with my grandson, he could have been injured. So I didn't, because I wasn't alone. But, you know, my whole life, in the last 10 years, it happened 10 years ago, I've looked back and thought, what a coward. I wouldn't even stand up for this girl that was being pushed around by this guy. I don't know. Trump has enabled these people to crawl out from under the rocks, and the rest of us are supposed to sit there quietly and accept what these brutes do.
Look, why didn't they go sit by the girls and just sit next to him?
They probably would have been stabbed, too. I mean, I don't know. Why don't you pull out that little 25 in your purse and just shoot the guy dead? That's probably what I would have done. Especially if he pulled out a knife.
There's something to be said
for carrying a little gun with you all the time.
No, but Kathy, just listen for a second. He did not have a knife out. He was just sitting there muttering and yelling. I mean, what I'm saying is what they did the right thing, or did they escalate a situation that could have been handled a different way? I mean, what if, you know...
Kelly, is that what it's come to in this country, that you can't even speak up? You can't even say, leave her alone, go back to your seat. I mean, you are going to really sit there silently while someone is badgered and pushed and made fun of? Is that the American way now? Is that the new way with this country?
So was it worth their lives? Were these girls in danger? That's a question.
I don't know.
That's a question.
That is a question. Was it worth their lives? I don't know. Maybe I'm sure they did not expect to die. They maybe expected to get beat up. But, you know, it's always got to be in your mind when you interfere in a domestic or something like that, that you're going to be injured. And I think they were heroes. And I think it's shameful to call it politically correct.
Kathy, listen to me. Listen to me. We're back on the air. We've got Kathy has called in, and Kathy is shocked that I'm asking whether it was a politically correct act, a stupid act to defend these girls and that got them killed. Kathy, go ahead.
Well, I guess that's what we've been bullied into by Trump. That's Trump's way, isn't it? You saw it in his rallies, pick on people. People that are walking out get slapped or sucker punched. he has enabled this. I mean, when he made comment about the judge, the Mexican judge, you're going to rule against me just because you're bigoted against me. I mean, it's the same thing. He has enabled these people to do this to other Americans. He has made it okay. You know, he told the judge, if people come in and blow up this country now, you're going to be responsible. Okay, well, she has to take the responsibility of all of these people that have crawled out from under the rocks that he has enabled to come up and out and be okay. Here you are talking about it, political correctness for the people that stood up for somebody.
Kathy.
What about,
Kathy,
I mean,
hold,
my God, what
Kathy,
is this country
Kathy,
coming to?
Kathy,
this is scary.
All right, so I mean, since she's not going to stop talking. All right, Kathy, listen, I'm asking the question if being a politically correct do-gooder cost these people their lives, if there was not a better, smarter way to handle it.
Yeah, I guess the better, smarter way is to get up and walk off and let these two girls be bullied and stabbed to death while you're sitting there reading your paper.
Are you?
I guess that's the way.
Kathy, is there any testimony or any eyewitness accounts that this guy had a knife on these girls? He's sitting there in a bus muttering to himself, or a train.
Well, it was my understanding that he was telling them to go back to their country. He was making fun of their religion. He was generally picking a fight with little girls. And so two big men stood up, and they died for it. And you're slamming them because they were politically correct, and their death, you know, doesn't mean as much because they were liberals trying to protect
Kathy. Yeah, hold
Muslims.
On. Kathy, let me just respond here. Just because you have a right belief doesn't mean the way that you express it is smart. That's what I'm saying. I'm asking if political correctness has not given rise to a lot of these social justice warriors who think they're Superman or they think they're underdog or whatever, and are going out. Do you think that it's right to go and you know, tell people that they're wrong and try to shut them down? Now, this guy's psychotic.
Wrong, Kelly? You don't think it's wrong what he was doing to those
I'm
girls?
I'm sure it was
You're
wrong.
Supposed to keep silent?
Yeah, but Kathy, the question is, if people have free speech, are they allowed to use it to say things that are wrong? That's the question.
Well, you know, yeah, he can go ahead and use it and say things that are wrong, but it appears from the description of the incident that he was a little overly aggressive. He was in their
face. He was not in their face. He was sitting in the All right, so I don't know everything that happened on this. I just threw this open as a question.
And I think it's shameful that you are shaming these so-called political
shameful.
Correct liberals on a train standing up for Muslims as doing something wrong. They pay for their lives. We play with their lives. But,
all right. Okay.
You know, to have you conservatives constantly defend Trump, I mean, it's true. It's true.
It's not a question.
Because it was a liberal area, and these guys stood up for Muslims.
It is a question of whether it was a smart thing to do or not.
It's shameful what this country's going to. Just shameful.
Shameful. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the shameful call. Mm-hmm. Have a great day. All right, so if you disagree with Kathy, you're shameful. All right, we'll take a little break here and get us some local news. People are calling in to reply to Kathy, but we'll be right back. 6:32. All right, so is this attack on the train Donald Trump's fault, as Kathy has stated? Number one. Number two, is this an example of social justice warrior busybodies? My problem with saying that definitively is I really don't know exactly what happened. Now, if this guy was in the face of these girls yelling and screaming, then I think it's a different scenario. But if he is just in his seat and yelling about Christians and Muslims and go back to your country and everything like that,
is it good to intervene? And here's a question. Is it possible the social justice warrior mentality kicked in on these people and caused them to set aside common sense and jump in there? This one kid, Micah, is that was his name? The one that barely survived getting slashed. His grandmother's mother, whoever it was, said that he's been in a lot of scrapes. So this is the kind of person who goes and gets in other people's faces and tells them what they should and shouldn't do. Number one, is that American? Number two, if he can do that, why couldn't a Christian or a Muslim come up to a gay couple and confront them? Or somebody eating pork or shrimp, you know, and just, you know, or women that don't have the hijab on, women that don't have a veil on, would it be okay because this is the beliefs of the Muslims to come up and tell these women that they're shameful? Would it be wrong for, you know, a Muslim to come up to Kathy and say, where is your veil? Have you no shame? Kathy, the shamester, the person who spends a lot of her life shaming other people, trying to tell them where they've gone wrong. Is this movement, the social justice movement, a misbegotten movement that is off the tracks, that is causing people to put themselves in stupid situations? And that's a question. So, I mean, is it possible that instead of making the country better, political correctness has made it worse? You know, and if a person is politically correct and they can go around and harangue other people, what would be wrong with a person with a different kind of a belief system using their beliefs to justify what they're doing? Why is political correctness right and everything else takes a backseat to it? Just curious. But the original question, did these people come up to a psychotic person, a dangerous man, and provoke him? Did they come up to a caged bear and put a stick in it, and then the bear got loose and started chewing on him? Just a question. I didn't know it was Trump's fault. You know, here's a scuffle on the floor of the Texas House, and one person said to another, I'm going to put a bullet in your brain. This is on Monday. Actually, this is just showing the skirmish itself. So here I've got a little clip of, and by the way, this guy, Talesian Midden Namkai Machi, wherever he was originally from, he must have been a brilliant guy. Reed College is very, very hard to get into. And this white supremacist looks like a Cro-Magnon, you know, big forehead and everything, kind of he's got to be on medication. His eyes are just real droopy and. All right, so here is a little bit from the Texas floor, the floor of the Texas Senate. All right, a shoving match and war of words nearly turned into a fistfight in the Texas House floor Monday, the final day of a bitterly contentious 140-day legislative session. This session has been very difficult, very, very difficult, said Representative Celia Israel. Democrat Austin, there are enough of us here who remember a time in Texas when respect and decorum ruled the day. So a lot of it had to do with, I believe, protests about the sanctuary city law that they brought in and deportation. Latino reps Ramon Romero and Cesar Blanco, Democrats, waved to the crowd and all right. So anyway, it was over immigration. Here's a clip that I'm hoping has a little bit more on it.
Day of the Texas legislature with finger pointing, shoving, and protest. things got a little out of hand at the state capitol, and customs agents were called on the protesters unhappy with the new sanctuary cities bill.
Things have officially wrapped up, but the big question tonight, will lawmakers have to return for a special session? Adam Bennett is live in the newsroom with more on all of today's drama. Adam?
Well, Lynn and Mia, things got so heated today at the state capitol that the lawmaker at the center of all this says he is now under DPS protection. Now, some Hispanic lawmakers who had words with him and protesters think the comment that sparked the fight, bigger issue of profiling. What a difference 140 days can make. From a ceremonial first day in January to a chaotic final day today.
It was an embarrassment.
This shoving match on the House floor happened as DPS was clearing out hundreds of protesters, many from Houston, who tell us they were holding signs and chanting against the Sanctuary Cities bill recently signed into law.
The DPS came down from the upstairs of the gallery and just started taking the signs away from people.
State Rep. Matt Rinaldi says he called ICE after seeing a sign that said, quote, "I am illegal and here to stay." He says when he told several Democrats, State Rep. Ramon Romero,
he said he called ICE multiple times,
physically assaulted him, while he says another Democrat, Pancho Navarez, threatened him.
And for that guy to say what he did and think that there's no reckoning or no repercussions or nothing coming, he's wrong.
But some lawmakers there say Rinaldi was the one making the threats.
There was a threat made from Representative Rinaldi to put a bullet in one of my colleagues' head.
But Rinaldi says he was only vowing to defend himself if attacked.
While pushing and shoving and anything beyond that isn't acceptable and it shouldn't happen out there, and I'm sorry it happened, the fact is he's asking for it. And he's picked the wrong group of people to do it to and on the wrong day.
And protesters tell me they never saw any ICE agents actually show up at the Capitol. Both the House and Senate ended the session this afternoon, but both could very well be under the same roof once again very soon for a special session that would deal with the property tax reform bill.
All right, so anyway, getting a little heated up down there in Texas. Take a break here. 523-1450. If you called in, Kathy was on the line. I couldn't really take the call. But 805-6180 is your text line, 805-6180 and 523-1450 to call in if you want to comment on Kathy's comments or on the idea that the social justice warrior movement is off the tracks and is endangering lives. That's my premise, 645. I can't speak specifically to the situation in Portland until I find out more, but it seems like they did poke a bear in a cage, and they were savagely attacked in return. All right, so got some here is, speaking of Mexico and Texas, do you remember this? If you're old enough, you might.
My baloney has a first name. It's O-S-C-A-R. My baloney has a second name. It's M-A-Y-E-R. Oh, I love to eat it every day. And if you ask me why, I'll say, 'cause Oscar Mayer has a way with B-O-L-O-G-N-A.
Famous ad. Now, little update for you here. And this is from the Borderland, KFOX TV. And driver tries smuggling in bologna made in Mexico at the port of Santa Teresa. U.S. Customs and Border Protection officers said they seized 30 rolls of Mexican bologna, which is not allowed in the United States because it's made from pork. Officials say it can potentially introduce foreign animal diseases to the U.S. pork industry. 30 rolls found hidden under toys and personal belongings in the cargo area of a vehicle. Driver was fined an administrative penalty of $1,000. Yes, things do get a little exciting around here. All right, I've got for you an explanation of why they tried to blow up Ariana Grande, why they chose her, the ISIS. ISIS fighters chose Ariana Grande's concert.
Was Ariana Grande targeted because ISIS hates everything she represents to her young fans? Here's what U2's Bono just told Jimmy Kimmel.
They hate music. They hate women. They even hate little girls. They hate everything that we love.
Ariana has 46 million Twitter followers and a staggering 106 million on Instagram. Her concerts are packed with young women and girls who admire her self-assurance and her sexy, proudly feminine style.
To hit a center, a den of immorality, as ISIS acolytes are calling it, is a great target for them.
I spoke to Mubin Sheikh, a former extremist who believes ISIS viewed the attack as a kind of perverted PR opportunity.
Ariana Grande, big name brand, you know media is going to descend upon it. Children being killed, deliberately being attacked in that manner. You know that not only are you going to get the coverage, but you're going to get that emotional response, that revulsion.
Now, some of the biggest stars in pop music are saying their shows will go on despite the carnage in Manchester. Photographers caught up with Nicki Minaj in Los Angeles.
Ariana, my sister, I love her, and I love the people of the UK, and I'm devastated by the news. It's heartbreaking.
Katy Perry says she'll perform as scheduled at a music festival in England this weekend.
I think that the greatest thing we can do is just unite.
Who cares what Katy Perry says? But anyway, so they were particularly targeting these. And I mean, the idea that they would go and blow up a bunch of kids and it would be the worst thing. I think this guy is onto something. Radical Islam tries to break people's hearts by doing these type of things, by going in and doing things that no other group would consider doing. And it is allowed by their law. The Sharia law is very, 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 very open-minded for these things, believe it or not. It's a very ancient law. It has never really been updated. Cannot be updated according to the theory. All right, so anyway, I've got one last break for you here with some weather. All right, and let's see if I got time for this. I think that I do. Here's General Mattis speaking at Memorial Day ceremony.
Ladies and gentlemen, Secretary Mattis.
They shall grow not old as we that are left grow old. Age shall not weary them, nor the years condemn. At the going down of the sun and in the morning, we will remember them. Mr. President, Mr. Vice President, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Dunford, Gold Star families, everyone, we gather here today with a shared attitude of gratitude. 23 centuries ago, so Plutarch tells us, an old Spartan king observed, it is not the places that grace men, but men grace the places. Today, we know that he was right. More than a century ago, this 624-acre plot of land was a plantation on the Potomac. Scenic, but hardly sacred. Now these fields hold the greatest treasure of our nation, America's courageous dead, those who today we pause to remember. Not far from here lies the marker of Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr., a Civil War infantry veteran who later rose to be a Supreme Court justice. Holmes said, those who serve in our military have hearts that are touched with fire. Having known great things, he said, they are content with silence. If you have ever known one of the fallen, you've known greatness, but it is hard to be content with their silence, for we miss them. The empty chair on a holiday, empty every day. The photograph that goes wherever you do, the picture fades, but the person in it does not. Their fighting spirit persists, passed down through the ranks. Their spirit echoes in those who serve today in the air, on land, and at sea. In a world awash with change, some things stand firm. Some things are, as Plato said, good and true and beautiful. The kid on the line who never had a chance to grow old will always be there to teach us that suffering has meaning if it is accepted out of love for others. To the families of the fallen, both here and at home, no words will ease your pain, but I beg you, let it have meaning. Unite your sorrow to their awesome purpose. People do grace places, but people also grace people. We are blessed by our time with those now asleep, the mighty and the gentle. Let us share their story with others. Then, like the poet, we all can say, sleep, soldiers, still in honored rest, your truth and valor wearing. The bravest are the tenderest, the loving are the daring. Now, ladies and gentlemen, it's my great honor to introduce our Commander-in-Chief, President of the United States, Donald Trump.
All right, and a little bit here from Tony Deo, Recipe for Marriage Poem.
My little brother just got married recently. We were at his wedding reception, and this lady read a poem at his reception. This poem was called Recipe for a Happy Marriage. And this recipe included such ingredients as 3 cups of love, 2 cups of kindness, 5 spoonfuls of hope. That is cute, but I have been married a while, and that recipe is missing some ingredients. I myself have used an entire of an ingredient called you. I use so much of that, I have to get it at Costco.
Tony Day, okay, we'll take a break on the hour here and tuning in this morning. Hope you had a great holiday. Kathy, you're mistaken. Social justice warriors create problems. They don't solve them. And they're busybodies. Sorry to tell you that. But they're busybodies, and I would never go up to a giant. This guy was giant. Go up to a giant guy cursing about Christians and Muslims, talking about stabbing people, and say, would you pipe down? It's got to be the dumbest thing I've ever heard. All right, we'll take a break here. 659 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 523-1450 and 805-6180 on KOBE. All right, so a little bit of a little skirmish with Kathy earlier regarding whether these social justice warriors in Portland were well advised to confront this guy. Obviously, in retrospect,
it would have been a lot better, a lot safer to allow the police to deal with the issue. I mean, kind of goes without saying, but what would have been wrong if the kids were not in imminent danger? I think, you know, this is just going off of what I don't know because I wasn't there and I haven't seen a clip of it. And I haven't heard a good explanation of what exactly happened, but if these people, and let me just ask you this, what was the motivation? You might say, well, what difference does it make? They're dead now. Well, if they were really worried about the women and were motivated by that, I would say it was a good motivation and maybe it was ill-advised, but they went ahead and stuck with what they thought was the best thing. I'm wondering, though, how many of these people that are social justice warriors do things to impress other people, because it's been in the news cycle that the fact of the matter is that there's a lot of people who are very caught up, and people have commented on this, people picking up topics or fighting for things that don't really have anything to do with them. That's one of the things that the guy, I'm trying to remember the name of the writer, Wolf, the guy that wrote Bonfire of the Vanities, is one of the great writers, commentators of the age, novelist, and written a lot of social commentary books. Tom Wolf said that the thing that stuck out to him about the PC movement was that it was a movement that focused on getting offended for other people. So anyway, here is from the Commander-in-Chief, his statement from Memorial Day yesterday.
To his parents, David and Rose, we stand in awe of your son and his courageous sacrifice. On behalf of the American people, I express to you our everlasting gratitude for what your son did for his country,
Kelly.
For his comrades,
it's Kelly.
And for all of us.
It's Kelly. Please
Andrew's
talk.
Andrew's father has said that he holds onto the
it's
promise.
Kelly. Can you hear me?
Of Joshua 1, verse 9.
Put you on hold.
The Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. Thank you. Thank you. To every Gold Star family, God is with you, and your loved ones are with him. They died in war so that we could live in peace. I believe that God has a special place in heaven for those who lay down their lives so that others may live free from fear and this horrible oppression. Now, let us pledge to make the most of that freedom that they so gallantly and brilliantly fought for, and they died to protect. Let us also pledge to tell the stories of Robert, Chris, Andrew, and all of America's fallen warriors today and for the next 1,000 years.
Very moving to hear Taps there. We got a phone call. Thanks for the call. All right. I've said this many, many, many times. If you call in and there's a clip playing, the machine has the clip playing. I'm talking through the machine, so you're not going to be able to hear me unless you really listen. If the phone is picked up, I'm talking to you, so say something to me. I'm not going to stop the clip to bring a call on, but I'll put you on hold. So anyway. All right. So these are interesting days here. Now, there has been an attack on Trump that is, I think, unprecedented in its ferocity and its length of time. And it goes from one topic to another. And the social justice warrior, the liberal mentality is Trump is unfit by definition. We've already proved that. Now we just have to show how he is unfit. So they go from one thing to another to try to prove. And here's our call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who is this?
Hey, Kelly, this is your old mate, Tim Bishop, your Marxist-Leninist friend.
Tim, you're alive.
Yes, I am alive. I know it's been a little while, hasn't it?
Yeah, you know, actually, Tim, I called your number and it was disconnected.
Oh, man, I've had 5 different numbers in the past 3 years.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe you're in phone sales. But anyway, hope you've been well, and how are things going?
Things are going very well. Things are going very well. And I just wanted to say one thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
With the new incoming Trump administration, I have to say this is probably the best thing for the rise of Marxism, Leninism that I've ever seen in the country. I can guarantee we will see an uprising here in quite a few years. I hope I see that.
Well, anyway, folks, Tim was on the show before to defend his Marxist, Leninist, and possibly Maoist beliefs. But so what do you still believe the same thing, Tim?
Not Maoism, but Marxism, Leninism, yes. Basically, where what we need is this, about 100,000 to 200,000 dedicated career communists who will devote their lives to the efforts of Marxism, Leninism, and specifically communism for the advancement of humanity.
All right, Tim, if I'm not mistaken, this is the so-called vanguard of the proletariat.
Correct, yes.
And the vanguard of the proletariat is understood to be the leadership, the educated, the elites, the college educated people who have spent the time to understand Marxism.
Yes. They spend their entire lives just devoting the efforts to communism and for the efforts of the communist revolution. Correct. Just as Lenin had during the 1917 revolution in Russia. Correct.
All right. So there were a lot of people that ended up getting killed during the Russian Revolution and afterwards. What would you do if there was a communist revolution in this country to protect people?
If there was a communist revolution to protect people?
No. What would you do, because there have been so many deaths in the Chinese and the Russian revolutions, what would you do to safeguard people so that there were not innocent people killed?
Oh, if there were not innocent people killed, well, they just need to step onto the sidelines. If they do not believe in the revolution, then they need to step on the sidelines. Basically, there are going to be deaths. Revolutions can be bloody. It is true. But if the people do want a revolution, then revolutions will happen. I mean, not all revolutions are good, such as we saw in the 1979 revolution in Iran. There were many, many deaths, and it was not a democratic revolution, but if the people want a revolution, then it will happen. Just like in Libya back in 2011. Wasn't the best one, but, you know, I can take it as an example. Mostly what I'm concerned with is that I want a people-centered, progressive revolution that would just happen mostly for the advancement of science and mostly for the advancement of the poor people in America, because we have not had any kind of advancement of poor people in America for the past 30 years, as you can tell by the stagnation of wages for the past 30
years.
Some people
would say the stagnation of wages for the last decade is exactly because of overly intrusive, busybody liberal economic policy. What do you think of that?
I don't believe that is so. I believe it is basic. I believe that is basically because of the current economic system, which funnels money up. The way that we have the current economic system is that, yes, a little bit of money does go to the bottom. However, most of the money and all of the money eventually just funnels all the way up to the top. What I would like to see is that the money funneling down to the bottom. Because if we had something such as a negative income tax, whereas if you make below a certain income level, then you get a positive income tax. And basically all that money, because, you know, poor people spend all their money, right? Poor people spend all their money, and if they get an extra dollar, they're going to spend it. So if poor people get an extra dollar, then they're going to spend it, and that's going to further up the economy, and that's what I would like to see. Is more poor people getting money. That way the economy grows and therefore the GDP grows as well.
All right, but how did the poor do in Russia and China after the revolution?
After the revolution, well, I'll tell you this here right now. In 1917, Russia was a semi-feudal society. It wasn't even a fully industrialized society. In less than 20 years, Russia went from a semi-feudal society, and Russia went from a semi-feudal society in less than 20 years to a full industrialized, militarized society with full universalized health care and full employment. Now, not even America can compare with that.
Oh, my God. All right. So what is the goal of the American communists?
The goal of the American communists, basically the eradication of racism, a standardized living wage that is indexed to inflation, and, well, just those as the basics right now. Those are the basics that I would like to see. I'm sure there's a few others, but those are the basics that I would like to see.
All right, Tim, got to go. Thanks for the call. Give me a call on my cell.
I will do. I will do a call. I'll call you there, Kelly. Have a good show.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. All right. Living, breathing communist. Let's take a little break here, and we'll be right back. 523-1450. Your views are always wanted and needed on the show, especially if you disagree. 719, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 523-1450, and 805-61802 text. All right, so you heard that. If you're a communist, you want people to overthrow the government. You don't care how many people are killed. The individuals have to step aside and get out of the way of the revolution. Now, that is in part because communists obviously don't believe in religion. They don't believe in God. They don't believe in the Ten Commandments. They don't believe that there is anything special about human beings. And the reason that's why they think it's okay for people to die, because people are basically tools to create a better society. Now, you might say, well, that doesn't make any sense, because if you're trying to make a better society, why would you do it for a person who's no more than a robot? But I'm just telling you what the communists believe. So here is a little bit from O'Reilly in the culture war. O'Reilly was a victim, his critics, of being a pervert. But other people will say, well, he was pushed out for stuff that was not against the law, and we do have a call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Absolutely wonderful. It was the most wonderful week last week. Starting off today with the great Kathy. She was spot on. Happy post-Memorial Day to you, Kelly O.
Thank you very much. So what was so great about your week?
I was just beside myself. I smiled like a Cheshire cat. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
It was just great. The Trumper, his whole crew, has been a total disaster on his 9-day trip. with the exception of the $110 billion arms deal thing, which is probably going to blow up too. But his pushing the president of Montenegro out of the way, the stupid handshake nonsense he does, the way he met, he's just a total buffoon. It was just so much fun to watch the reactions of normal people in Europe versus the conservative coup bozos that voted for him in the United States.
Well, what do you mean, huh? I'm just trying to think of what to say. So you're a cheerleader for Trump's failure.
Well, yeah, with a little bit of a modification, you know. I mean, I don't mind he screws up everything as long as he doesn't blow up the country. As long as he keeps screwing stuff up, making himself look a real bozo, along with his criminal comported kooks trying to be communists or making fun, making pals with the communists. I mean, I don't get where you conservatives are not getting on his case.
Well, we don't believe like you do that he is inherently evil and is has to be exposed and humiliated and thrown out of office. We don't happen to believe that. We don't believe it is true factually. And number two, we don't believe it would be good for the country. You, or at least some people who would agree with you, apparently don't care how bad it would tear the country to shreds.
He's doing more to damage this country. Kathy, again, was spot on with the socialization stuff on that and whatnot, where people are not stepping up and stopping evil in its tracks when they see it. Evil right now is presenting its face in the form of that Cheeto orange-colored bozo you call a president.
That doesn't even make sense. Just to sit here and listen to you, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, everything the guy does is wrong before he even tries it. You give him no credit for anything positive that he's doing, and you're just
cheer.
Hold on. That's your opinion. There has to be facts that go against that, but you're a cheerleader for failure. Shame on you. Kathy called up to shame me. Well, shame on you. I'm passing the shame wand over.
No. That doesn't work that way.
Sure it does.
You got the whole the European community right now just wanting to distance themselves from this guy because he's such a kook. Now you're going to tell me that all these presidents and all these hotshot elected leaders in Europe and elsewhere are a bunch of bozos, more or less calling me a bozo, and then they're all a bozo too? That's ridiculous.
Hey,
there's a lot of people out there that think this guy's a whack job.
Yeah, it's called liberalism. It is a group movement. It's groupthink. You're taking part in the pleasures of groupthink.
Oh, my God. So everybody, the French, the British, the Germans, the Australians, they're all liberal loonies? Is that what you're saying?
Has Europe been wrong before? Has Germany been wrong before?
Oh, my God. This is
I'm asking you.
The default mechanism from you conservatives. Oh, but Obama to the issue. You keep deflecting from the idiocy of the guy that you hold in great esteem, that Cheeto Orange man.
Listen to yourself. Hey, you know, you'll never, ever, because of the way you talk, the invective and disrespect that you use, and your lack of factual points and any kind of a linear description of your arguments, you're never going to persuade anybody. You are a topping. You're like a dessert topping for people who already agree with your ideas.
Oh, there's nothing wrong. That's what you capped with a cherry. I am the cherry. I am the cherry. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm top of the heap. I mean, I love it. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You're more like the pits, but thanks for the call.
That was funny, guys.
Thanks. Well, have a good day. All right, folks. I just, you know what? Number one, I can't stand bullying. Yeah, there was bullying on the train and Portland, and it didn't go too well for the intervention, I understand, but I don't like bullying. Trump is being bullied, and you might say, well, he's the guy that deserves to be bullied. He's the president now. Why don't we join together and support him to the extent that he's doing the good things, but give him some general support and make our thoughts known when we disagree with him. The problem here is that, I mean, to sum it up, the left is so vociferous, it is so rabid in its trashing of Trump
that you don't, people don't even, people who don't agree don't even listen to the details anymore. It doesn't make any sense. It's crazy. 729 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450. We've had some good calls so far, and we'll be right back. Got some local news for you. Whipping post. The liberals, the Dems are tied to the whipping post. Trump's whipping post. All right, so I'm getting texts complaining that I'm letting the lefties come on the show and rant and rave, but you know, it's a basically this show is a free speech spot as long as you're, you know, respectful. Now, and it's good to hear what people say. I mean, there is no substance to what Frankie says. He doesn't bother to put it into a syllogism. If A, then B. If B, then C. A, therefore C, you know, the classic. And it's just, you know, these people are comforting each other. These lefties, like they're in prison and they're forming a prison gang to talk about how bad the warden is. It's really, it's kind of sad. Now, here is some evidence to suggest that what Trump was complaining about originally, the wiretapping or whatever you want to call it, was not only correct, but it was wide ranging. And the same people that get up and pontificate and point fingers at other people were doing wrong. James Comey did a lot of things wrong. He refused to vigorously investigate a lot of wrongdoing, even though he sees himself as God's knight here to do justice. And they were doing a lot of illegal observation, surveillance of people. And I guess, you know, so what's, I don't get it. Here we go.
The Senate Intelligence Committee is giving its top two members blanket authority to issue subpoenas in the investigation into alleged Russian interference with last fall's election. Chairman Richard Burr and Vice Chair Mark Warner will be able to issue the subpoenas as they deem necessary. Now to a follow-up story on last night's explosive story about illegal surveillance conducted by the Obama administration on thousands of Americans. Illegal searches so egregious, the Obama administration received a harsh rebuke from the secretive FISA court. Here's Chief Washington correspondent James Rosen with reaction.
What does this mean? House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi is a member of the Gang of Eight, the group of House and Senate leaders, plus chairs and ranking members of intelligence committees briefed on intelligence issues. Yet Pelosi confessed ignorance of this week's disclosure that the National Security Agency, for at least 5 years under the Obama administration, systematically violated Americans' Fourth Amendment rights.
I don't know what the particular... I have not been briefed on the particular case that they are referencing.
In declassified documents first obtained by the news outlet Circa, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court scolded NSA for an institutional lack of candor and added sternly, this is a very serious Fourth Amendment issue. House Oversight Committee Chair Jason Chaffetz told Fox News the documents appear to show the Obama administration routinely abused the NSA's internet surveillance tools. We must get answers and hold people accountable. Fellow Utah Republican Chris Stewart sits on the Intelligence Committee.
Do you think someone should go to prison for them?
Well, if they violated it and they did it knowingly and they avoided or ignored processes and procedures to protect that privacy, then absolutely they should be held accountable.
The FISA court said the new Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, and Director of National Intelligence, Dan Coats, enacted reforms that will, quote, largely resolve NSA's so-called compliance problems. Civil liberties groups said the disclosures should factor into lawmakers' decision at year's end about whether to reauthorize the NSA collection program that witnessed the abuses.
I don't think that this is a problem that is going to be resolved with just an investigation by the Department of Justice. What we have are authorities that were broadly drafted that allow surveillance that is concerning.
The agencies are pushing for reauthorization of this authority, but they can't even identify the scope of the impact on U.S. persons that these programs have.
The sheer scale of the Fourth Amendment violations disclosed is staggering, as was the sternness of the rebuke to the Obama administration delivered by the FISA court, which ordinarily approves 99.9% of the government's requests for surveillance. As of a few minutes ago, however, Brett, this story had not been covered on the Washington Post, New York Times, nor any of the three nightly news broadcasts on the three broadcast networks.
Pretty amazing. We will cover it with the panel. James, thank you.
Pretty amazing when you think about how the, you know, basically is somebody like Frankie calling up ranting and raving about how terrible the Trumper is. And so the people on the left are so biased, they don't even care. All they want is to get this guy out. Get him out, throw him away, flush him down the toilet, forget about any ideas that he had to change things. All right, so here is from James Clapper, who was the head of trying to remember what his official, former director of National Intelligence. He's over all intelligence. James Clapper never saw smoking gun certitude evidence of Trump-Russia collusion. So the claim that there has been wrongdoing by Trump.
The issue that has been the bombshell this weekend, this issue that Jared Kushner, at the time private citizen, yes, a private advisor at the time to the president-elect, was having these meetings with the ambassador to Russia, Sergei Kislyak, and they hid these meetings from public eye. We also learned that he met with the head of a sanctioned Russian bank. You were still the director of National Intelligence in December. Are these things that you would have known?
Well, yes, they would have. And just to reinforce John Brennan's former director of Central Intelligence AG, his comments before the House Foreign Select Committee on Intelligence. And I have to say that without specific, specifically affirming or confirming these conversations, since even though they're in the public realm, they're still classified. But just from a theoretical standpoint, I will tell you that my dashboard warning light was clearly on, and I think that was the case with all of us in the intelligence community, very concerned about the nature of these approaches to the Russians. If you put that in context with everything else we knew the Russians were doing to interfere with the election, and just the historical practices of the Russians, who typically almost genetically driven to co-opt, penetrate, gain favor, whatever, which is a typical Russian technique. So we were concerned.
And this is what's likely triggered the FBI's now extra attention to Jared Kushner, that we've been reporting that they believe he has more information. They're saying he's not a target. It would have been intelligence like this would have triggered it.
Well, I think so. And I think John alluded to his concerns that he expressed to the FBI, which is the proper channel. I have to say, you know, at the time I left, I did not see any smoking gun certitude evidence of collusion. But it certainly was appropriate for, given all the signs, certainly appropriate for the FBI to, and necessary for the FBI to.
All right, so no certitude there. And the fact of the matter is that they're not going to have any certitude. As we've seen, they've turned over the entire NSA to try to find out if they can prove that Trump did wrong. And as many, many liberal commentators, or at least a few prominent ones, have stated, Dershowitz, Trump didn't, there's no evidence that he did anything wrong. We'll take a little break and come back. 523-1450-742. So here is a little something on what is going on overall, which this is Riley. And Riley has been appearing on Glenn Beck.
haven't seen any good coverage yet.
Oops. There's always some other clip playing, but all right. So here is O'Reilly on Glenn Beck about the fake, the manufactured thing. This is the thing I would say if somebody like Frankie or Kathy could open up their mind and listen, or anybody else who's really, really plugged into the left, think about that you might be being played by your own leaders to try to just gin up enough energy to get this guy thrown out because of the change he represents.
I guess the meetings are private, but I don't get what the dialogue was there. All right, I'm not seeing any good reportage, and I'd like to know. So in the midst of this, big story, terrorist story in England, and the president speaking to the Pope and then going to NATO in Belgium, what do I see on CNN? White House in crisis. This is what they're doing. This is what their lead was last night. I mean, I'm saying to myself, am I not living in the real world anymore? White House in crisis. What crisis? What crisis? There's an investigation going on whether Russians were able to compromise people like General Michael Flynn, okay, and Paul Manafort, who worked for Trump briefly in his campaign. Were they able, the Russians, to compromise those people in some way? That's the investigation. Okay, that's where we are right now. That's a White House in crisis? See, this is all fake. It is fake. The crisis being manufactured. Now, that being said, it could down the road lead to something more. It's possible. I want to know. Mueller is investigating now. The FBI is investigating, and two congressional committees are investigating. That's four. So I assume we're going to get to the bottom of it. But in the meantime, the anti-Trump media is going to gin it up every single crisis, crisis, crisis. You know. And what does that do? It hurts the president's ability to govern because he's always on the defensive. So I think Trump's done a pretty good job so far in Europe. I mean, it doesn't look like there's been any faux pas or any of that. To me, I'm looking at it from a fairly objective viewpoint.
Agreed. We'll take another break here and come right back for, got some weather for you. Finish her up. 523-1450, 805-6180. I'll get to your text. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces. All right, so summing things up, the Memorial Day, hopefully you had a good time and, let me go over, we did talk about whether the social justice warriors in the train in Portland who were stabbed to death and they're being called heroes, were they heroes? Did they get involved too much? Should they have called the police? Obviously, in retrospect, they should have, but was there an imminent danger to these young girls? If so, why not just move over by the young girls to protect them? Why confront the guy who's obviously a nutcase and ranting and raving and talking about Muslims and Christians and stabbing people? Why not just let it go? Why? And I want to know how many events in America, how many social justice warrior interactions and confrontations have blown up in the face to the harm of the social justice warrior? All right, that was a lot of the first hour. And then we began to talk about some other things and finishing up with the fake news. Had a long call from Frankie. Had Kathy was just in pieces after she heard me say that it was possible that these people should not have been involved in this. She was besides herself with shock. All right. Florida man tries to kiss rattlesnake, gets bitten. Florida man was found by, well, the snake was found by Charles Goff, resident of Putnam County in the northeast part of the state. A day later, a neighbor named by local CBS journalist Ron Reinhold, started playing with the snake and made his ill-judged move. He's been obviously just a teen. Reinhold said, "I'm going to kiss it in the mouth," and the snake bit him in the face. Ron was just acting silly, you know. I guess he said he could kiss the devil and get away with it, but evidently he did not. This is a metaphor for all liberals. You can kiss the snake, but you're going to get bit. He was conscious when he was flown up there. The snake escaped for a happier day afterwards. It is still not clear why he tried to kiss the snake. All right, JFK's report card. For all of you up-and-comers, what was JFK's report card like? Well, in his own handwriting, he filled out his application for Harvard. He got mostly D's and C's with a couple of almost B's, it looked like. So the president did not make it into Harvard based on his grades. As a matter of fact, it said on the top of his application, will not enter. So you think that President Kennedy was a genius, right? Here's what he gave right above his picture, the reason he wanted to go to Harvard. The reason that I have for writing to go to Harvard are several. I feel that Harvard can give me a better background and a better liberal education than any other university. I've always wanted to go there, as I have felt that it is not just another college, but it is a community with something definite to offer. I would like to go to the same college as my father. To be a Harvard man is an enviable distinction, and one that is, I can't read the last line, but you get the feeling. His dad writes a letter and says, "Dear Dean Layton, thank you very much for your letter. Jack just was graduated year before last from Choate School, Willingford, Connecticut, and I intended to enter him in the University of London as I did his older brother Joe. I took him abroad last year, but he had a recurrence of a blood condition, and I brought him home to be near his doctor. He entered Princeton University, where he stayed for about 2 months. His condition got no better, and I sent him to Peter Bent Brigham Hospital. After a period of 2 months there, I sent him south to go to Arizona. Jack has a very brilliant mind for the things in which he's interested, but is careless and lacks application in those in which he is not interested. This is, of course, a bad fault. However, he is quite ambitious to try and do the work in 3 years, et cetera, et cetera." So Jack Kennedy was not this huge up-and-coming superstar. It sounds like he got in on his dad's connection to the university and his dad's money. Now, obviously, he was a pretty smart guy nonetheless. Here's a little clip from him. JFK at 100, his life was not as glamorous as you think. And this is from BBC.
Kennedy lived at a period of what we call...
And this is in connection with a photo gallery that they have set up at the Smithsonian.
Well, the golden age of photojournalism. Television had not really emerged as the communicator of the world or the educator of the world. Kennedy didn't care how he looked. He didn't care whether you photographed a silhouette of him or whether he was in a bright light. He knew that, in essence, his mere presence would present the right image to the American public. We have a political climate which is, you know, emerging right now in America. You know, some people say that our leader is learning on the job and he should have understood what the job was before. But I have to tell you, Kennedy was learning on the job too. You know, his first 100 days was not easy. He had the Bay of Pigs. He had a lot on his plate to figure out. Jacqueline Kennedy was probably, I would say, JFK's greatest asset. You know, she was cultured, she had taste, she had humor, wit. Jackie never really wanted to exploit the children. So JFK would always wait until she was out of the White House And then he'd have them kids running around up and down the halls. And, of course, he'd invite a photographer. And there are those famous pictures of John, you know, crawling through the desk. But there's this wonderful picture of JFK walking John to bed at night, as he would often do.
All right, go on to the BBC or just go onto the internet and look it up. It's a great little clip there. Here is Tony Deo on Silver Alerts.
In New York, we have the Amber Alert system, which a lot of cities do, but they've added a new one recently. It's called the Silver Alert. They put out a Silver Alert when an elderly person has wandered away from their home and didn't tell anyone where they're going. It's for real. They call it the Silver Alert. My problem is that the details of the alert are always this vague description of every old man you've ever seen in your life. They're like, hey, be on the lookout for a late 70s male, gray hair, brown, rather comfortable looking shoes. Answers to the name Grandpa. All right. I'll be on the lookout for those 400,000 gentlemen.
All right, folks, thanks for tuning in and have a great day. Kelly O'Connell and Las Cruces, see you in 22 hours. Ciao.